Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game.
On this episode, your host Lewis Irons is joined by Head of Coach Education and Development Greg Patterson and High Performance and Talent Development Strategist Donald McNaughton.
Guys, here we go again, another podcast recorded from isolation. Greg, as always, thank you for joining me. And today we're fortunate to be joined by Donald McNaughton. Donald, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. And thank you for joining us from what looks like a very busy office there.
Oh, yeah, it certainly is a busy office. Not the tidiest.
Well, no, we appreciate you giving your time. I know that everyone has a bit of time on their hands at the moment, but I know there's a lot of work to be done and a lot going on. Greg, you and I have spoke a lot about getting a lot of these podcasts done because, you know, while football may be stopped, the hard work that goes on with the coaches doesn't stop. And if anything, now's the time to really get cracking on with some good work for these guys.
Well, I think that's right. I think, obviously, when the lockdown came, in terms of the coronavirus crisis, I think, you know, we've got a couple of problems, if you like. One of them being those courses that were currently running. And unfortunately, a seminar or a tutorial with Donald was unfortunately cancelled because of that. And that, actually, for that period of time that Donald was to come in and join us at Orion, we were actually bringing 3 B licences together. So a bit of a challenge for Donald in that we deliver maybe 5 different B licences a year, and with 3 of those group cohorts together on that particular Sunday when Donald was meant to join us. So yeah, that's obviously one of our issues, and the other one is to try and those people that have booked on courses during this lockdown period is to keep them ticking over as well and hopefully starting their courses so that we don't create a backlog, obviously, when football's able to start again.
Yeah, well, Donald, before we get right on into the bulk of this podcast, if you just want to kind of introduce yourself, I know a lot of, you're very familiar with Donald, Greg, and I know you've worked with the Scottish FA since about 2006, Donald, so
yeah,
you'll be familiar with a few guys that are listening to this podcast, but can you give us a wee bit of an introduction for those listening?
Yeah, as you say, my name's Donald McNaught, and I work as a high-performance coach who specialises on the mental side of performance and the human elements of performance. I've done that, you know, full-time now for near 20 years. So as well as football, you know, I work academy level, first team, I work with coaches, and I've worked with a lot of Olympians and international teams across sports and multi-disciplines. So I've been doing that for 20 years now.
Oh yeah, so certainly a wealth of experience. And Greg, we speak about, you know, experience and constantly giving the coaches a lot to think about when it comes to mindset, particularly, you know, the mindset of a coach. This is sort of crucial stuff that needed to take on board, isn't it?
The way Donald joins with us is good because Donald, you know, he not only deals or inputs on our B license, our A license, and then more intensively, I suppose, on the pro license level. He's also on our children's license and our youth license. So he does have input on all our licenses right across. So it's almost like he's a member of staff, which is great. And the really good thing, as you say, with that experience and that knowledge is that Donald's always slagging me because, you know, he will be thinking about things when he's driving. You know, he's driving down from Inverness to Rangers, perhaps, that he works with. And, you know, he'll spark ideas and he picks up the phone and he wants to, Greg, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? Let's add this in. So it's always, that fertilisation of ideas is always, I think, Lewis, good for the coaching workforce that are out there.
Yeah. And Donald, I know that it's not just sport that you have, you know, experience in terms of when you're presenting, you're speaking to different people in different areas of work, but particularly when it comes to football and in particular coaching, there will be a number of these, but what are the key messages that you try to get across to the guys, and particularly those on the B licence at the moment?
Well, I think the B licence is a really important one for everyone that's entering, you know, the coaching curriculum, a pathway, especially for people that's played the game, players that's played the game. You know, that's your entry-level coach, and it's still at a high level to start to go along that pathway and transfer your information. The reason it's so important is, say if I'm a player and I've played the game for 20 years, you know, 50, whatever it is, since I've been a kid, I've been used to focusing on usually my own performance, rightly so, as part of the team, you know, as how I am part of the team. And all my knowledge about the game is in my muscle unconsciously almost. You know, I'm deciding in a split second, do I go outside the player, do I go inside? Do I make a long pass, do I short pass? Do we change? Do I follow the striker or don't I follow the striker? And that has to be very split second within the match. And then as a coach, when you're going on the coaching licence, the first step is probably you're starting, and players have said this to me, it's the first time I've ever really thought about the game in different ways. The tactical awareness of really thinking about shaping, really thinking about if I move in this position, how does it affect, you know, the other positions on the team? So that first step in terms of looking at the game from a helicopter view was a critical one and a really important one and quite challenging. And it should be quite challenging if you're doing it because it's a different skill set.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I guess part of the challenge that faces you, Donald, is getting people to think in these different ways and to encourage them to explore and continue to learn. But when you engage with the coaches in particular, do you see them finding that a lot? Do you find it daunting, or do some take to it quite natural?
I think in all the challenge with the mental side and the emotional side of anything, human performance in football, is it's hidden. So yeah. You can't immediately see it. It's not as saying, okay, hey, Joe, I'm going to teach you to increase muscle mass. Go to the gym, push this weight, and 3 weeks later, you can see an increase in your power or your muscle mass. Mm-hmm. But because the invisible part of the psychology is invisible, what I'm going to say to you is I'm going to want you to notice about what managers has influenced you in the past or coaches, and I want you to think how that has applied. You are going to apply that to your coaching practice. Now, that's quite a thoughtful area. You have to think about it. You might think, oh, how's that going to improve me? But they all know when I say this, here's why it's important. And here's why you know it's important. Because you all know that some days you run on the park and you feel like you can take on the world. The next Saturday, sometimes you run on the park and you're scared you're going to trip over your lace. Nothing's changed in your skill level. And that's human. Some days we get up, we feel great. Other days we get up and we doubt ourselves. So that individual part of it and that hidden part is really important, but it's hard to measure. Yeah. But because the game is so competitive now and information is everywhere, this human part of coaching, this emotional intelligence, is the 1% and 2%, and more than that can really add to your coaching practice. Really inform you.
Yeah, like you say, you make good points, I don't know, when you talk about, you know, one day you could do something the exact same and then your lace comes away. It's a nice analogy. And I guess when you're talking about mindset and you're trying to tap into this with coaches, there'll be days where you do really well, there'll be days when you fail, and you have to, it's these adversities that you have to come over in most walks of life, but particularly coaching.
Definitely. And I think it's a good, what's going on just now relates to it totally. You know, like everyone's, you know, doing the social kind of distancing and keeping to their own houses and speaking to friends like we're doing on Skype and Zoom and FaceTime. Now, some of us, it'll be more challenging than others. Yeah. But what we're all learning through this is resilience. So you don't learn resilience through easy times. You don't learn resilience through reading a book. You learn resilience through the tough times. So even just now, Pelly said it in the 70s. He said when he was flying on the jets from Brazil to New York Cosmos, when he was at Cosmos, and it was when they were far more easier about regulations, he was walking down the aisleway and someone said to him, what are you doing standing in the aisle? Because it might be turbulence. And he said, everything's practice. I'm practicing my balance. So just now, we're learning patience. We're learning to reflect. And we can take that into our coaching practice and our games.
Yeah, of course you can. Greg, I'm sure the frustrations that you're experiencing from the situation we're in, you have to take the positives from it, though, don't you? And Donald makes a great point there about that resilience.
It does. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, you talk about players and coaches needing that resilience all the time when results go against them and as Donald alludes to, performances go against them. So, you know, it's one we often get asked, how do you deal, you know, we do Q&As on courses and things like that with managers, with head coaches, you know, and that's often a question that will be asked, how do you deal with tough times, how do you deal with resilience? And, you know, Donald's probably answered it very well there, that, you know, you've got to go through those tough times to know how you're going to react to that, to then I suppose, put your methods into practice, because you know you can read a book, but until you're on, until you're in that moment, you know, how, you know, how do you deal with it? It's that, is that emotional intelligence then, Donald? Is that right?
I think it's emotional intelligence and also having often an unconscious strategy. So it's, I work, you know, with players every day and athletes every day. So sometimes I'm working with an athlete or a player with an injury, or maybe a long-term injury. So it's natural that they will feel down at certain points of their recovery. So, you know, you validate that. You say, of course, you, that's all right. That's what you, you should be feeling just now. You maybe feel frustrated or fed up or when it's going to end, the end. But being able to point it out that what you're learning just now is resilience. Just now, when you notice that, you notice it's tough, but you'll come through this, and in later times in your career, you'll be able to use this experience and recognize it and say, you know what, it's feeling tough just now, but I know I can go get through it because I've come through things in the past. That is why sometimes, if you don't do it naturally yourself, especially when you, when you're young, it's really valuable to have someone beside you that can point that out to you.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly something that you can't really learn from, you know, coursework or a book, is it? You have that experience to be able to learn and develop from it.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've talked about resilience. I know there'll be so many points, Donald, that you want to go into, but what are the other key qualities and attributes that you try to sort of paint a picture when you're delivering to coaches?
Well, I think at this, certainly at this B level, it is, you, and you used the term, which is emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
So emotional intelligence is the ability to reflect on yourself as a coach or a player, notice my strengths and weaknesses, both as technically, tactically, but also my history and my experiences. Where's my biases? What do I tend to go towards? What do I kind of tend to go back from? And having an understanding of that. And then be curious about people. You know, so if we imagine like a circle, a ripple, when you're a player within a team, most of my focus is on my own performance. Then I'm rippling out that I might actually think, how do I perform within my defensive unit or midfield unit or attack? And then as the team. So the emotional intelligence as a coach is thinking, I'm wanting to be curious about what makes sense for other people. What's other people's life like? What's other people's values and beliefs like that I'm coaching? And then the next bit, which I really emphasize people, is in order, knowing myself and the other players, can I slightly adjust my language, how I am with people, to get the best out of the player in front of me? Now, we would say 20 years ago, that would be putting your arm around someone or giving someone, actually just giving them a nudge. But it's more than that. It's actually been more nuanced than that nowadays as well. You know, it's understanding other people, knowing yourself at a core. You don't change that, but actually you can adjust who to speak to at what. What's the terms? When to be quiet? And that is more important now than ever.
Yeah.
More important now than ever, this emotional intelligence ability.
Yeah. I'm curious to ask, because I know, as we touched on at the start of the story, that you've been involved with the Scottish FA for a number of years now. Have you seen that particularly develop quite a lot and become more important and crucial?
Yeah, I think it's developed a lot over the last, you know, 10 years, 15 years, because football doesn't operate in isolation for society. So in Scotland, our society has changed dramatically since probably the 80s, you know, the deindustrialization, and then coming on from the change in the education sector as well. So what you've got is young people coming out of schools and within schools with a different approach to the world. You know, what's really encouraged, and I think it's brilliant, the ability to ask questions, have an opinion. So actually the coaches that have emotional intelligence can work with a wider variety of players, and that's to their benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that applies in all walks of life in football, doesn't it?
From
the club jobs to, you know, wherever you go, you're going to go into different cultures, different clubs with different values. So that will contribute a lot. Greg, I'll go to you on this one. For coaches, having that quality and trying to draw that out of them and grow that will stand them in good stead in their careers, you would think.
Of course it will, and that's why it's so good having Donald, you know, on that pathway. You know, if a coach does join us at a B licence, you know, Donald might see them again at A licence and pro licence. So this isn't just a one point in time either. And it's that, as Donald's alluded to, that recognition of that point in your career that you're going through, and that experience or that know-how that you can draw on. And I think that's a crucial bit. You know, theory's one thing, but on the other side, it's how you implement that theory. And that's why, as I say, Donald, you know, might join us for an hour and a half on the B licence. You know, this is replicating that, obviously. But then you might do a little bit more on the A. And then by the time you get to youth licence and pro licence, even then, you know, he's chatting earlier there about, you know, he spoke to five of the pro licence guys on a one-to-one yesterday. So, you know, I think that is, it's good to kind of have those balancing checks with people, with experts, if you like, along the way that can help you draw on that theory to try and implement it as best you can.
Yeah. Do you feel, Donald, this might be quite a vague question to ask, but do you feel when you're speaking to coaches, no matter what level, that they appreciate the importance of these qualities that you're explaining to them, that thirst for learning? Because effectively that's what most of them will have on the course, that desire to learn and develop.
I think all the best coaches and have that desire for knowledge and discovery. Yeah. You know, so it's that thing about, I wonder what this is about. Is there something I can use here? And apply it to themselves. And that's the challenge about, you know, the mental side or the emotional side. It's, I call it, sometimes I'm helping the guys get real, real skill-based work, which is setting a goal for yourself. How do you know you're achieving it? How far away from it are you from yet? What could stop you? And you can use that now. But the more even valuable bits is the penny drop moments, the insights that people get. And you can't force an insight. You can't force a penny drop. And that's for coaches is really frustrating, because you can't make someone get it. All you can do is create a learning environment where someone gets it. And I'll give you an example of that. I was working with a player almost 15 years ago now. And I've known him for a long time. And he was a young player and he went on and still playing, had a great career. And I seen him about 2 years ago on one of the coaching licenses. And he said, Donald, I want to tell you a little bit of this. Remember when you showed me this at this club when I was a young player here? I didn't really use it, but I was coming back from an injury and I remembered about it. And I used it to cover injury and it really worked. I had a great season. And that's the penny drop. So that was 10 years.
Yeah.
And he still used it. And I think the other thing that's really interesting now is I'm working with coaches now who I worked with as players. You know, and seeing their development as well and how they apply it, you know, and how they use it and see their changes as well. So it's a very much a long-term timeline, I think.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, and it's a good and a good point that you make, that you can't really put a timeline on it, can you?
Yeah.
Vary from coach to coach and player to player, yeah. Such is the nature of the game, I guess. But one thing along the way, Donald, that I just want to touch on, that do you talk to coaches and players about how they can measure their performance, how they can maintain that level? How do you drive that home?
Well, do you mean in terms of their getting better?
Yeah, about growth.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that, again, is one of the challenges as growing as a coach. Your brain works well when it knows that it's making progress. Right? So I'll not mention the name, but I'm sure we've all flown with various airlines that the queue is about 100 yards long. You know, when we're trying to get on the plane. How good does it feel when you take that one step forward, even though you stop again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great to be fair.
It is, even though you stop again. And that's chemical. That's chemical. So your brain knows, oh, I'm making progress. So the challenge with coaching is, if you do it, if you're not going to measure your coaching progress just on results, and maybe you're not even taking a team just now, how do you know you're getting better?
Yeah.
So you have to come up with your own metrics, and that's what I encourage someone to do. So maybe my metrics for improving a coach internally is about how hard I work, what I go to learn and educate, who can I get as a mentor, work on my language to understand each other, work how I listen if I tend to speak, you know, a lot. So there's all things that I can measure myself, which are using usually, and this is the same in business as in sport, they're lagging and they're leading indicators. So if I do these better and improve on them, and I can measure them, you know, subjectively, I can go, right, I'm 7 out of 10 for that. Now 2 months later, I'm 8 out of 10. The lagging indicator is me getting a job or my team improving. But I have to do the first thing right and have the patience to do the first thing right. And the challenge as a coach, especially as we get older sometimes, is that's what young players are learning the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, that's what 12 and 13s are learning. And sometimes we forget what it's like to be that learner. And that's really useful to go, God, I'm not sure. Am I getting any better? Maybe I should just stick to what I know. And that's why the B license is so valuable, because you should feel what I call that oh shit moment.
Yeah.
I wonder, what am I doing? I'm so confident here and I'm not sure. God, I'm just speaking in front of everyone. How do I describe that? What about this? That's learning moments. That's you just getting pushed out of your comfort zone. That's where the learning is.
Yeah. When it comes to the B license, Craig, or any of the licenses, do you notice that when you're seeing the coaches, that moment that they have where they're like pushing themselves maybe out of a comfort level? Is that when it gets most rewarding for the likes of you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it happens at different times for different people, Lewis, depending on probably their experience and knowledge they have prior to them coming on that B license course. You know, for somebody, that oh shit moment might be the morning of the first day when they're actually driving. Oh shit, what am I doing? Why have I signed up to this? Why am I kind of paying all this money? Why am I taking all this time away from my family? Why am I making all this sacrifice to attend a B license?
Mm-hmm.
You know, others might be a little bit more comfortable in the theory environment and in the lecture theatre, if you like. But as Donald maybe alluded to there, is that moment they step on the pitch and they've got to start coaching in front of their peer group. That might be their oh shit moment, and they might suddenly go to pieces, although they coach for 10, 15 hours a week back at their own club. So those old shit moments are important to notice, and I think that's a skill set group, is to notice those different old shit moments and try and help the coach along the way, because ultimately we want them all to pass the B license course, and it's just helping them on that journey, and they'll all have those little wobbles, as Donald says, they'll all have those little wobbles along the way. But it's important, again, and I keep emphasising this, that's why I like having Donald so much on the courses, because it's that, just recognise you're having a wobble and recognise that wobble is crucial to your development and those learning moments within your journey.
Yeah, because then those moments, I would imagine, Donald, will, when you do learn from them, you do that will almost lead to a mental strength that you can develop in as you go on.
Exactly, Lewis. And it's not that you need to tell anyone. You know, that's the thing. As I always notice, especially when I'm working with young players in academy, is when I can help them to articulate and describe what's going on with them, that helps them. And it's the same as we're older. I said, that butterfly's in the stomach, and there is, you know, when if we talk technical terms, that's performance anxiety. Yeah. So I know what that is, but I know that if I reframe it in a way that said, that's good to that. That's good. That's the equivalent of running out of the tunnel. I'm at the edge of my comfort zone. If I'm working with young players, what it also gives me is empathy. And that's really important.
Yeah.
Because I can remember, you're always remembering, God, I'm a bit nervous here. And that helps you relate to younger players when you're thinking, why can't they just do that? You're thinking they just can't do that because they're a wee bit nervous about it.
Yeah. It's interesting because when you talk about that, I think back to moments that I've had in my life where I think about it, and yes, it applies to sport most of the time or anything like that, performance of some sort, but it can certainly, because ultimately you're dealing with people at the end of the day, and I guess that's an important thing for coaches to remember, Donald, all the time when they're going on their journey and dealing with players.
Yeah. I think that's what I said at the bit. What I work on as well is the human element of performance. What is true for us all, like you said, is we all experience, it's all human experience, and the psyche and everything about it. What do I look at? What do we work in? What's the footballers and the players work in? Is how does that human experience that we all have, you know, the thoughts and the emotions, and then how does that affect the ability to learn, coach and play in a football perspective?
Yeah.
You know, that's what we're looking at. It's how do we be a high-performing human in a football perspective? And it's all, you know, ups and downs. And, you know, Carl Jung, the great psychologist, said it brilliantly. He said, the job of an older man is to notice what a younger man's done well and point it out. And I love that. You know, and I think that's the role of a coach and mentor as well.
Yeah. That is a great point, isn't it, Greg? I'm sure I saw you nodding along and agreeing with that there, but that is a great thing to be able to try and abide by if you're an older coach or someone going into coaching, looking at younger players and younger coaches.
Well, more often than not, the coach will be older than the players. Yeah, you know, so absolutely that. I'm busy scribbling that down, and I'm even thinking about Donald, having worked with him over the years, and the ability to scribble that down just now as he's chatting, because he often speaks about, you know, people, you know, when he's talking, he says, yes, you will get the slides from me, you know, if you're fortunate enough to see the lecture theatre rather than this coronavirus type situation. But, you know, and hopefully coaches when they're listening to this are taking notes as well, because Donald talks very well about the ability, that he calls it the kind of magic between the brain into the pen and then down onto the paper. So that's one I've noted down there, that job of an older man is to tell a younger man when he's done something well. And that's, I think I've said it already, you know, it's just that recognition of those moments along your career to see what's went well, and I suppose, Donald, that probably brings you on to a lot of, it's a good time maybe to chat as we're thinking about the B licence. You know, we use a very basic feedback form now, Lewis, on all our courses that Donald developed for us. Donald, I don't know if you maybe want to pick up at this point.
I think I actually used it yesterday with a group, and it comes from The Inner Game, you know, developed by Galway, and it's about how, you know, how we reflect on our own inner performance that we've been talking about for the last half hour, about how that affects what we do outside in the world. And there's three key questions, and I was doing it yesterday with a group just in terms of responding to what's going on. And the first question is, what have you done well over the last 2 weeks? You know, in response to the shutdown, we were putting it in this. But in terms of performance, it can be, what has your team done well? Now, here's what's important. We start with that question, right? Because the brain's got a negativity bias. It's a, what do I mean by negativity bias? The brain is an ancient brain in a modern world. So it's still got the amygdala that I'm sure we all I've heard about at some point, which is sparks out the hormones and the chemicals when we're in threat. So it's the fight, flight and freeze kind of responses as well. But the brain's got a negativity bias. That's why as a coach, your team can play great for 88 minutes and you could notice the one bit in the 89th minute that made you give you a goal. Because your brain's doing what it's meant to do, because anything different or a negative is still sticks to the brain more than the positive because it's perceived as a threat. So the reason we start with that, what went well, is because the brain will want to go to the second question, is what was tricky or what was difficult first. So we start with the first one, what went well? And you go, what went well is I've had patience and this has allowed us to do this. And you stick to yourself, not about other people. It's about you or your team. So you did, what we did well was we played out from the back when we needed to. We did this here that drew them in and we moved the ball further and give us more space. Or what we did well was we played a high press, they were adjusting to it and they were putting the ball over, you know, and we adjusted quickly. They were getting us in behind. So that's a positive one. So we start with that question, what do you do well? What I did well as a coach was I was playing in front of 30, we were coaching for the first time in front of 5,000 people. I'm only used to 20 people. What I did well was I kind of felt myself getting caught up in my thoughts and I brought myself back to the game really quickly. That's what I want to do well. And we want to be descriptive rather than judgmental. So judgmental is, that was great, but no giving any detail, or that was rubbish. Right? What we're saying is, when this happened. Now, if you notice what I'm saying with my words, when I'm speaking, I'm describing what's going on. I'm, as Greg said about writing something down, that gives the brain a hook to remember it for by.
Yeah.
So I've done, remember that time when you were, what you did well was 20 minutes into the game where you were playing left wing back and you really kind of cut them open and you see the opportunity. And so I'm like, oh yeah, I can remember that. If I just say, oh, that was great how you played, it makes them feel good, but it doesn't give them anything to work with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I go on to the second question was, what is tricky? And the thing, what was tricky, that's the difficult things. Well, what was tricky was that, use that example, we played a high press and they were knocking it behind us. You know, so, or they changed, they played a different shape to what we thought there would be play and they got more of the ball, right? So that's what was tricky. And the effect was this. The effect was we couldn't keep it, the ball, and we were constantly kind of, balls were coming in from wide or we were constantly too far up. And that was the effect. So you're always thinking, when this happened, this was the effect. When this happened, this was the effect. Mm-hmm. And then the third question. And the third question is the key one. Because the third question is what turns everything into a learning opportunity. And the third question is, if you knew what you knew now after playing that game, what would you do differently? Well, what we do differently would be I would have changed the shape quicker, or I would have played this different shape here. Or if I'm a player and someone was getting the better of me, this is how I would play. I wouldn't let him turn. I actually didn't realise how quick he was and let him turn and he ran at me, or the other way around. So every opportunity, every game becomes a learning opportunity for us. And we can use that in everything we do.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you can use that at every level, can't you? Because it just, the criteria of what you've maybe done well is bigger, and the better the coach are, the better the team you manage. But there's always going to be something that you look at. You talk about that 88 minutes and then an 89th minute one wee thing. That's probably what you try to get out of a coach, isn't it? To pick it and always be identifying so that you continue to grow.
It's interesting about, you know, the psychology of human emotions. I was talking to this to a friend last week, and he was talking about winning a league or getting a league, but because of the situation, it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And he joked with me that Klopp would probably feel the same. You know, he was joking that he wouldn't.
Yeah.
And I made the point, and we'll all know this, that I was standing at the side of a park, and there must have been about 100 people there. I was involved in a team, and the team came back from 1-0 down to win 2-1 at 5 minutes, with 5 minutes to go. And there was maybe about 200 people there. And afterwards, I self-reflect, you know, it was that I noticed the elation that I felt at that point was no different to the elation I felt if when I'd been at bigger stadiums and at bigger clubs. You know, the emotion within you is still the same. Mm-hmm. And that's why we love the game. That's why people love the game all over, because it is the same emotion. You know, we've all felt it when we've watched a game. Mm-hmm. Whether you're watching a junior club or a Highland League club, or you're watching a Premier League camp, or you're watching your country. When that ball hits the net, that's the same feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's great. I mean, Greg, you'll be able to relate to that as well, but that's why we love the game, isn't it? And that's why ultimately we've got people wanting to work in the game and become coaches in the game. That passion is something that I guess you don't really need to teach if people are involved in football. It comes to most so naturally, doesn't it?
It does. And I think it's interesting talking about coaches as well, because coaches say that it means even more. You know, that feeling, as Donald spoke about, when they might see a move that they've been doing in a training drill and see those 10 or 11 people in their charge maybe be part of that move which created that goal and led to that goal. And just knowing how invested, and we've spoken about that countless times, Lewis, on this podcast before, about how invested a coach becomes when they decide to take on that role as a coach of a team. So it is all-consuming. It is probably 24/7 for a lot of those people. They might not be on the training pitch with the players. They might not even be at the club. But if they're in their car driving home, if they're sitting at the dinner with their family, they're probably thinking of different ways in which to try and improve that team. So that emotion that Donald talks about, I think a lot of coaches say that it's compounded when they're actually coaching. You know, it meant more to them when they're coaching than when they were a player, because just of that all-consuming nature. You know, you're a player, you go to training, you go up the road, as Donald said before, you probably don't think about it. You know, he uses the analogy of the, you know, you could be a very experienced player, you know, with several international caps. You know, you're at the top of that ladder. But then when you start your coaching journey, you've got to start at the bottom of another ladder.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think all those things that I'm trying to say, I think all those things come together so that when you're a coach, it just compounds that emotion even more. And they talk about coaching being that drug that people can't get away from. And whether, as Donald says, whether you're in the amateur game or whether in your senior game, that's the same. That's that drug that people want to keep coaching, and they want to, you know, people get sacked, don't they? And they lose jobs, unfortunately, given the nature of the game, but they still want to go back. They want to get back in as quickly as they can.
Yeah, because all of the things that we spoke about, Donald, that the work that you do, obviously, spoke about mindset, spoke about, you know, reflecting and learning and developing. I guess then when you harness it all together and you're doing this, you're ultimately, you're looking to motivate, aren't you, really, these guys? Because, and I guess, is that one of the easier parts? I might be rude of me to say, but is it one of the easier parts is motivation when you've got that amount of passion in a room at coaching level?
I'll come back to that in a minute, because I just want to say, if I could just say that, I'll give you a great example of what Greg's, we were speaking about a man, about a coach being invested, and Big Dank said it when, Big Dank and Ferguson said it when he was interviewed when he was doing the Everton show, and I remember it distinctly. The reporter asked him, how does this compare to the highs of your playing career? And his very words was, more intense. Better, because exactly the same as Greg said, I'm more than, I was totally everything about it, you know. So, you know, that shows you there, it's a guy that's done so much in the game and played at the highest level, and there, that coaching, that thing there where you're, everything's in the group and the team. Now, to ask your question about the motivation is a better way to think about, you motivate people is, how do I create a motivational climate for people? Yeah. So a climate is, how do I create, I'm not the greatest gardener, so my ability to grow flowers is renowned as poor, to say the least. So in order for something to grow, a plant can grow, it needs the climate in order for it to grow. It needs the ground, it needs the air, it needs watering. So motivational climate is, as a coach, for your relative age and stage and where you are, how do you create an environment that allows people or maximise the chance that they feel they have the want to come and train as hard as they can and perform? You can't make them. You can create the climate that they feel, this is what I'm, where I'm wanting to be. And it changes at different stages of development of a player. Very different motivational climate at 10 to senior first team. You know, that's quite a key distinction.
Yeah. And I guess when you talk about creating those environments, Greg, when you put this into your role, it's bringing in the right people to get a balance of what you present to the coaches. And when you have someone like Donald in the room, you want them to soak up as much of that water and air, as, if you like, in that environment to learn and develop.
Absolutely. And, you know, at the heart of it, at B license level, we have a curriculum that we've got to put in place, a minimum criteria, if you like, that UEFA put in place. And you're right, in creating that performance environment would be one of those things that we've got to cover, as would sports psychology, as would physiology, and all those different things. And that's exactly right. And that's why we bring in the experts like Donald to then help with those things, because Donald's, you know, he's worked with clubs before, he's worked in high performance sport, and he's able to give that knowledge, but not just the knowledge, as I've said earlier, you know, it's that practical experience. You know, Donald Park, when he had this role, Donald, you know, talked about him, you know, him and Robbo when they were at Inverness Cali, and using Donald and the strategies that Donald set out for them when they were, you know, chasing promotion and everything like that. So, you know, that's how these things come about. It's because people they've got that practical experience that backs up the knowledge that will then help the coaches on the courses.
Yeah. Donald, I know that we've obviously spoke about the fact that, you know, that it's not just sport that you work in, you know, yeah. You work in business, corporate, community, all sorts of industries. But sport in particular, I just want to tap into your thoughts here. You were talking about that passion you have. Is sport ultimately the main passion and desire in your life, is it?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think, you know, again, Carl Jung and Jungian psychology are a great passion of mine. And it's actually above my desk. I've got a picture of me kicking a football with my dad on a beach when I was four. You know, and that's what Jung would call the golden thread. So I played and I was involved with a lot of sport kind of growing up. And I did different things in my life. And that's when what allows me to do my work a lot of the time is and make sense of things is I've had a wide variety of human experiences quite, you know, over my life in a quite a condensed, by the time I was 21, I'd almost lived a life. You know, I'd traveled halfway around the world, hitchhiked through Europe twice, been doing different jobs. And it's funny because you think you're from a wee village, Chuchter village up in the Highlands, but that informed me about life.
Yeah.
And then when you take that human experiences and put it in a structure with knowledge and skills on the mental side as well and understanding, you always apply it to yourself first and then bring that back into the football environment and the sports environment, which you love. So this Jung says, the golden thread, life can only be lived going forward, but only makes sense when you look back. So when you look back, for most of us in football, that's been our passion most of our lives. So it's, you know, it's, so it kind of can be obvious. But most of us, again, stray off the path at some point. We do different things for different things. But you don't quite, sometimes, this has been my experience, you don't quite have the thing that really sparks you up. So if you're lucky enough to get that, and I think this is important for the B license, the sweet spot is when you're doing something you love, right? Whether it's football, whether it's coaching, whether it's playing, there's a need for it. You know, so the world's looking for it. You know, in football looking for coaches. Now, what I say to all the guys in the B's, you have to look at something that people want to get from you. So as a coach, are you just a I'm just a coach. Or are you actually, and that comes from the third part, is what could you be world class at? You know, and again, the world class is, you know what, just now, actually, I'm going to be a coach, but actually, I'm going to be an attacking coach. Or I'm going to be a coach that coaches transitions, or I'm going to be a goalkeeping coach within the team framework. So in the B license, I'm really encouraging the guys to work out of their strengths and develop something that differentiates them from other coaches. You know, so that's taking the career development path out of it. And I think players now, it's very noticeable, are coming to the coaching journey far earlier. And it'll only enhance their playing as well because of that knowledge of the game. Because, of course, that's what the Dutch were doing. That's what total football was. An awareness of how my role affects the whole of the team in the 70s. You know, that's what they were really doing there. How my knowledge of the dynamics, that I'm not operating in isolation. I'm a independent problem solver in the park as well because I can think about the game intelligently. And I've still got that, and I've got that drive as well.
Yeah, because we touched on it at the start of this podcast about the current situation we're in and how now, I guess, is the time for when you touched on looking back, Donald, but also living your life moving forward. Mm-hmm. Like now, and as we come out the other side of this pandemic, coaches will be able to look back on what they've maybe done during this time, how they've facilitated things, how they've engaged themselves, and how they've ultimately dived to learn a lot and develop through.
Yeah, I think I did a little interview about 10 days ago. I shared with how players, you know, can thrive in this area in this last 2 weeks and going forward. And one of the points I raised was technology is brilliant.
Yeah.
Get a phone out and watch clips of you playing well and feel what it's like. If you're a coach, look at clips of your games. And you're there again. That's what visualization is. We learn through using our imagination when we're kids to make sense of the world. So we all do it. We all think about the game. I always at the licences, I talk, and I'm showing my age here. Daley Thompson was a great favourite of mine, the great decathlon. And someone asked him, after he'd won the Olympic gold, do you do any of that visualisation? And his reply was, oh, I don't do any of that rubbish. And then the second question was, how much do you think about the decathlon? And his answer was, all the time. And that's the same for us as coaches, isn't it? And well, beyond, that's Greg saying to me about raising, getting him on the phone, because you're thinking about it, you're making pictures, we could try that, we could do this. So great opportunity to enhance what you do through technology, but also the quality of the mind, because the thing about the mind and the brain is it's not constrained by time and space. Yeah. You know, and it's the blessing and the curse, because that's why mistakes hold on to players, or players hold on to mistakes sometimes, because the mind doesn't stay in the present, it goes to the past, or it's got the ability to go to the future. So now is a great opportunity to think, how do I want my coaching career to go? Doesn't mean it's guaranteed. It means, what would I love to achieve? What would be that moonshot for me? We spoke about it on the pro license. And then to get through with that is, what's that first step when I get off listening to this today I can take towards it? Maybe it's making one phone call. Maybe it's getting one A4 sheet of paper, putting at the bottom where I am, putting at the top where I want to be. Third question is, what could I stop me getting there? And fourth question is, what's my plan? On A4, four questions, you're rocking and rolling already. Simple, small steps.
Greg, I'm sure you'll completely echo those sentiments.
Absolutely. And again, it's just, it's actually, albeit, you know, you sit and watch the news and it's all bad news these days, isn't it, about this coronavirus crisis, but it's actually a really nice time for those that are interested in developing themselves. And you'd like to think that all the listeners of this podcast, as well as all the people that are on a B license, A license, whatever level of course with us, are people that want to improve themselves for the right reasons. So it's actually a really nice time to take stock just now and reflect on that, as Donald says. And that's a really good exercise I've seen him use often on courses. It's just that, and that's probably the task, if you like, for those B license listeners, I think, is to write at the bottom of the page, where am I now? And write at the top of the page, where do I want to go? And then work out that pathway for themselves just now and what they can do to help themselves along the way. Or in other words, as I've just said, reflecting upon where they are now, as Donald's alluded to as well, what can they have done better? What could they, you know, we might be in this for a while yet, you know, weeks to come of this yet. And, you know, what can they do? What could they have done better over the past 2 weeks to make themselves that better coach, to make themselves a better learner, to make themselves better at reflecting? As Donald says, can they go in and look at video footage? You know, there's a million things. It's interesting that, you know, social media does get criticised at times as well, but you just look at a lot of the players and the impact they're having on social media, challenging each other at skill practices and different things in the back garden. I look at kind of Marvin Bartley as well, who's crying out, you know, Marvin Bartley, the Livingston player just now, he's crying out for people to engage with him, to do chats like this and put it out to the general public. There's all kinds of examples like that just now, as people realise they've got an opportunity to make themselves that little bit better.
Donald, I mentioned at the start, I know you'd have a lot to work through. The one problem that we have on this is that podcasts do have to come to an end at some point. Would there be any other kind of points that you'd want to give to the listeners at the moment?
I think, you know, the main point we've touched on at the edge there is, you know, it's a Stoic philosophy, you know, and Stoics from the Romans just now is what helps us get through this. You face, and it's the same in a game, you face what's going on just now clear in the eye. On a day, you live a day at a time, so you live what's going on in the game clear in the square in the face. And you don't try to kind of delude yourself or anything like that. You think, and how that would show up in your career is, what do I have to do just now in order to make this a good day for me? Or what do I have to do now to move my coaching practice kind of forward where I want to go with the constraints we've got? But we never lose sight of this will end. So the brain needs a beginning, middle, and end. So you live a day at a time, but you don't think, you know, that, oh, this is never going to end, or it'll end tomorrow. You think at some point this will end, and I'm going to be ready for the end. I'm going to take it out. And no one's there. And also, I take it on myself to do what I can do. It's to control the controllables. If you notice you're getting frustrated, either within the current situation or with the game or with your team or what you're doing, that question's a great question. What can I control? I put my focus on that. If I'm frustrated, is it an uncontrollable? If it's an uncontrollable, I practice letting go of that. So that would be my key message there, is control the controllables.
Brilliant. Well, that sounds like a great note to wrap up, guys. Greg, any thoughts to add there?
No, I don't think so. I think Donald's made a great job there. Although I'm slagging him earlier about not using many slides when he does present to a group, he is a man for a flip chart or for scribbling things up. So I know he talks through those pictures and that imagery that he's mentioned. But hopefully this, I think it has. I think the way he's described a lot of the stuff today has come across well for the listener. And it's all, as is the case all the time, you know, listening to these guys is great, Lewis, but it's actually that action. Action's the next part, is putting it into practice. And as we've said, no better time than during these unfortunate times at the moment.
No, you're absolutely right. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure sitting down and chatting it through with you all. So thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks, Lewis.
Thanks, Donald.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.